Good morning. Today is our second day of session, Friday. Friday the 9th of July. Gizmo was just saying yesterday was the anniversary of ordination in 2003. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yesterday. So today, a little later on, I want to talk about a koan called Bodhidharma Pacifies the Mind. And this is a koan from one of our founding teachers, kind of the founder of Zen. So called. We actually don't know if Bodhidharma existed per se, but might have been cobbled together from a couple of different characters, but there's that mythic quality to to all great religious traditions, and yeah, and Zen's no different. But they serve a archetypal purpose. Yesterday, and I talked about the basics of body, breath, and mind, and just to reiterate that aspect of practice, that the sesshin is that container that supports that very basic endeavor, this very practice of really simple attention, to detail around our physical posture, the way we interact with our externals through our physical body, and the breath that links inside and outside, the continuous flow that's with us from the moment when we draw that first breath, that Buddha shout, through to the the last death rattle. And then the mind, this mind, that so-called small mind and this big mind that we study. And again, Dogen Zenji's exhortation or description of practice and how to practice. To study the Buddha way, this way of awakening, is to study the self, and the self is the, he talks about self of the small s, as in the kind of I that we generally run around with and think about as me, my life, my past, my future, my relationships, my joys, my fears. And then he says just so we study that, we pay attention to it, we bring attention to its existence. Ha, oh, there I am. And in doing that, by actually studying the self is really about forgetting the self. And, forgetting that self is the key to sesshin. And not forgetting the casual kind of, oh, I wonder where I put myself. Well, that's good, but more that we come to, through this practice of focusing on breath, through koan, through attention, that the self, this myriad, this ball of ideas and experiences, gets forgotten in the endeavor to engage wholly with this experience that's arising. Dogen Zenji and many other writers like to use the moon as an example of this awakened state, this kind of bright 8th of July experience of sitting in the Zendo. And they say it's like the moon reflected in water. is that book by Kazuaki Tanahashi that gathers together some of Dogen's injuries, Zenji's writings. It's called Moon in a Dewdrop, and it's that wonderful description of our experience being like the moon, this bright moon that's in the sky, and it reflects. I think he says in the dewdrop there, on a pond, and when the pond is still, then that moon gets reflected perfectly, like a mirror, the mirror mind. And then, but when we ruffle the surface through our active thinking and active chasing after thought, then we tend to, even though the moon is still there, our appreciation isn't there, and the moon is not seen as it's kind of in its full brightness. And so our practice again is about calming the mind in session. It really is about calming the mind and let go of continuous thinking about our own dramas. And we've all got dramas, all of us. It's endless. And so we practice to calm that mind, and we calm that mind through attention to body, breath and mind. And it's kind of as simple as that, over sessions, it's like a little laboratory where we agree to come together and to practice in a certain way and adhere to certain guidelines as a sangha. And then and in doing that, then the body and the mind settles magically. And just that thing about desire, we always have a desire for something more, or we have, so much in some ways. We have our life, we have health, enough health to get here anyway, enough health to walk in the door. We've got food. Good company, not much talking, but still feels like good company. And then we've got the bright day outside, the birds. We could always have more for sure. But our practice over these 3 days, next 3 days, is to really focus and throw away those concerns. Again, I say at least for the next 3 days, all our challenges and things we need to deal with will still be there, guaranteed, on Sunday. Or maybe not. Maybe we don't know. And I think sometimes, especially I think when I first got back from the States, people would say, so has Zen changed your life? I've invested a lot of my time into a kind of formal practice, and I kind of always have to think about that and go like, no, I don't know, I don't think so. But I guess what really shifted is I guess my relationship with suffering. Suffering's endless. It's the first noble truth. The Buddha said, the first noble truth is the truth of suffering. It's humanity. As Leonard Cohen says, he says, there's that in his wonderful song called Anthem. It's just a brilliant expression of the truth. He says there is there's a crack in everything. He says the holy dove, it will be set free and caught and freed again. The dove is never free. Just beautiful. It's just that expression of just the fact of our life. But ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. A wonderful song. St. Leonard of Montreal. Yeah. So, you know, doing this practice, we start to see that there is no I that is separate from, no I that's kind of in here that is separate from what is out there. It's all of a piece. You know, our concerns about others are our concerns about others. And the Dogen Zenji goes on to say after he says to study the Buddha way is to forget the self. He says to forget the self is to be enlightened by the 10,000 things. 10,000 is just a way of saying a lot, everything. We get enlightened by these 10,000 things. You know, it's like, what are they? You know, they're what's arising now. It's the sounds. It's the emotions, it's the bodily sensations, and it's nothing more, nothing less to be enlightened by those things. You know, it's like what turns up, you know, by your own suffering, and that is the awakening to that. You know, that is the truth, the absolute truth. It's all the Buddha's ever taught. So Sesshin really is about, in this container, about letting our defences go. You know, not practicing letting go of managing our situation. And opening to this direct experience. You know, letting go of our habit to ruminate. To either create something wonderful or something terrible. And just for things to be. Really challenging. Really challenging. I thought I wanted to bring up Bodhidharma's story of and his koan with his first successor. Shinkuan in Chinese, or Shinko in Japanese. And we recite, during the lineage, we recite Bodhidharma will appear somewhere down there. You will hear his Bodhidharma, Daiyosho. And before him is his teacher, Hanyatara. And then after that is Taiso Eka. And Taiso Eka is, so Bodhidharma and Taiso Eka appear in this koan here. And Eka is the name he gets after he studies with Bodhidharma, Shinkuan, Shinko. Gets the name Eka, I think, which means light of wisdom. Maybe it's Shinko. Anyway, one or the other. Bodhidharma is the founder of Zen, was an Indian teacher who was apparently at the age of 10 or 8 or 7 or something, that he was discovered by Hanyatara, who was an old Buddhist priest, and he was kind of discovered and studied with Hanyatara from the age of about 7, and he studied with Hanyatara for about 40 or 50 years, and then he was in, this is where it gets a bit, you know, archetypal, I think, until and then he finally left India for China, I say, about age 110, which sounds pretty old. made 3-year journey across the Great Sea, and eventually ends up in China. And then he ends up meeting the Emperor of China, Emperor Wu, and they have an interaction, which is another koan, case one of the Blue Cliff record. And things don't go that well with the Emperor. He ended up with a koan, nice koan, but and then he heads off to Mount Shorin, and sits there in a cave, or establishes a small monastery there, and sits there for a long time, say 9 years, and then his fame starts to grow, and he begins to attract people, and they're sitting in the cave. You know, I guess some writers will say it's because of his, you know, holy vibrations were flickering out through China, and one of the people who felt these vibrations was Xing Quan, and I say he might have been a general, something like that. But anyway, he's a long-term practitioner, and he is of this great teacher, Bodhidharma, and so he comes many, many miles and sits outside the Bodhidharma's cave. And this is where the story comes up, and I'll read it to you. So, Xing Quan went over to Shorinji and day and night beseeched Bodhidharma for instruction. The master always sat in Zazen facing the wall and paid no attention to his entreaties. On the evening of December 9th, heaven sent down a heavy snow. Xing Quan stood erect and unmoving. Toward daybreak, the snow reached above his knees. The master had pity on him and said, "You have been standing in the snow for a long time. What are you seeking?" Xing Quan said in bitter tears, "I beseech you, O master, with your compassion, pray open your gate of Dharma and save all of us beings." The master said, "The incomparable truth of the Buddhas can only be attained by eternally striving, practicing what cannot be practiced, and bearing the unbearable. How can you, with your little virtue, little wisdom, and with your easy and self-conceited mind, dare to aspire to attain the true teaching?" Ouch. "It is only so much labor lost." Listening to the master's admonition, Xing Quan secretly took out his sharp knife himself, cut off his own left arm, and placed it in front of the master. The master, recognizing his Dharma caliber, told him, "Buddhas, when they first seek after the truth, give no heed to their bodies for the sake of Dharma. You have now cut off your arm before me. I have seen sincerity in your seeking." So the master finally gave him the name Ekka. Xing Quan asked, "Is it possible to listen to Buddha Dharma?" The master replied, "The Buddha Dharma cannot be attained by following others. That is, one has to see directly into your own nature." So that's kind of the story, and the actual koan goes like this. So that's the lead up, and then so the koan itself is the core of this matter. So Bodhidharma sat in Zazen facing the wall. The second ancestor, that's Xing Quan, who had been standing in the snow, cut off his arm and said, "Your disciple's mind is not yet at peace. I beg you, my teacher, please give it peace." Bodhidharma said, "Bring this mind to me and I will set it at rest." The second ancestor said, "I have searched for the mind and it is finally unattainable." Bodhidharma said, "I have thoroughly set it at rest for you." And there's a commentary to this. The broken-toothed-old foreigner, that's Bodhidharma, proudly came over 100,000 miles across the sea. This was as if he were raising waves where there is no wind. Toward his end, Bodhidharma could enlighten only one disciple, and even he was crippled. In the poem, coming from the west and directly pointing, this great affair was caused by this transmission. The jungle of monks at sixes and sevens is your fault after all, Bodhidharma. Then a little commentary here by Zenkei Shibayama, who put together this commentary on the Gateless Gate. He says the above account, just read, is not in accordance with historically traceable facts. It may be a mythological description by the author of the Keitoku Dentoroku, which is another book. But the painful and desperate struggle in seeking after truth, even at risk of one's own life, is not a mythological fabrication by an old Zen master. Anyone who has experienced the same pain and hardship and really seeking the truth cannot read it just lightly as an old story. And there is an old poem to describe this. The snow of Shorin is stained crimson. Let us dye our heart with it, humble though it may be. So I guess these stories, these old koans, aren't about something else. You know, they're about they echo and are themes that arise directly in our own experience. And so that's why they're written down in these books. And I think this koan has a number of points, but two of the most important ones, the first one about that, it isn't easy. It isn't easy. You know, this practice is, years of our own reliance on thinking to work things out. Even lifetimes of practice. Out there, lifetimes of our genealogical DNA lineage of trying to work it out from the first time, like we encountered conscious thought. I don't know whenever that was, millions of years ago. I'm like, oh, look at this thing. I can create such a thing as tomorrow and yesterday, and look how useful it is. These things don't exist, of course, in reality, yet incredibly useful. Green, yellow, wow. Me, you, even better. Dog, cat, food. Incredibly useful. We're altogether wrong. And right, do you know? Not the whole thing. And so we start to encounter this as being the whole thing. And then we start to apply reverse thinking. We start to use the thinking on our basic experience. And the two are separate things. And then you just have to look at the media, whether it's, social media or mainstream media, as to how many points of view there are. It's very confusing. Think about all the situation of COVID around the world. It's like things that we know about are the things that we hear about, and that's very partial as well. It depends what that particular information source deems as important to us. And so practice is about, our practice is like, we've got this huge DNA and media and all this stuff, and our own stuff that we've added to it as well. And we're like, I guess it's like the cartoons, like Wile E. Coyote or the Roadrunner. It's like that. trying to stop, and then to turn around and go the other way. And then every time I bow to the Buddha's got a Sova sticker on his chest. And so that's the one that turns against the flow. Aiken Roshi described it as kind of going uphill. It's like it's the hard work. You know, it's like the turning the regular thoughts of streams and ideas. It's going that's right. It's going that way. Left to right. And that's the initial part of practice, is that. And then at some point it turns right to left. When you get to the top of the hill, it rolls down the other side. So that's our practice is that turning against the flow. And it's hard work. It really is hard work. And how many people do this thing? 10? You know, there's not thousands of people. Oh, there are, you're saying there were 500 sessions that happened in France, so maybe the French have got it more than we do.
They were from all over the world.
Yeah. So, you know, so to arrive here is quite a thing. And so, you know, we are to be congratulated. You know, it's hard work. You know, it's also challenging work to sit day after day. I mean, it could be in the pub or on the beach. But something drives us, you know, that truth-seeking mind. And that's what we see in this koan with Shinkan turning up. Standing in the snow, you know, even cutting off his arm. Not sure that really happened, but it, you know, illustrates the depth of our desire to put our minds to rest. You know, what is it that's nibbling at us? You know, it can be nibbling or biting or all encompassing. And do we want to die without clarifying this? You see, the Buddha, Shenkuan, they're all prepared, you know, to lose their lives over this. I had a friend in Mountain Monastery in New York who was working with in hospice, and he said he would see a lot of people coming to the end of their lives, and the big question comes up at that point, and he said it's too late. They also had a friend, Mike, who was a long-term Zen practitioner who was dying of leukemia in hospital. And he said, you know, he'd been through this of a lifetime of practice and then this final great, you know, suffering. He said, you know, Shinko, everything the Buddha taught is true. So, you know, it's kind of had this you know, yellow face, yellow beatific face. So he'd done the work. You know, and the second point is that, you know, Bodhidharma says, ultimately, Shinkuan says, you know, can you please, you know, put my mind at rest? And it's that real beseeching. Again, that's kind of around that first point. It's like, you know, I'm suffering here. And Bodhidharma challenges him. He says, you know, bring me that mind. And which is, in some ways, it seems a little, you know, kind of trite when you just kind of trot it out there, but that real challenge, bring me that mind. You know, my mind, what does that say about us? My mind is not at rest. So that challenge from Bodhidharma, bring me that mind. So what does that do for us? You say, bring me that mind. It's like, okay, well, Is there something to be brought? And then, but we know Shinkan has been practicing a long time, and he says, I have searched for the mind, I have searched everywhere for the mind, and ultimately it is ungraspable. Can't be found anywhere. It's not a thing. You know, there is no so-called future, there is no so-called past, there's no so-called present. You know, all these are labels for this experience. It is, you know, it is you, it is me. You know, and we practice to realize this. You know, so the Shinkan says, you know, I've searched for the mind and ultimately it is ungraspable. I've searched and it's ungraspable. And what a relief. Ah. You know, this thing that we struggle to find. You know, ultimately, it is presented, arises moment by moment, like this. You know, the 10,000 things, or one thing. So yeah, we've got 2 full days left, and you know, after a couple of days where we're settled down, then it's, you know, the opportunity arises now for us to use that that lifetime of practice, that lineage of practice that we hook into, you know, our own sangha here, and all the Buddhas and ancestors. And all the people, men and women, who've practiced throughout the ages, you know, to allow us to be here. You know, they have created that container for us. You know, and in our gratitude and you know, our own sense of bringing this forward and creating it for others, then a certain kind of sense of you know, responsibility as well. For us to realize this for ourselves. And again, coming back to the basics, body, breath, mind. And maintain the posture in all that we do. And there are different postures for different things. Breathing, connecting, inside and out. And then bringing the mind to settle on this experience, whatever our particular practice is.